Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 219. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
That's me.
And we have four movies to get into tonight, pretty in depth, so we're gonna get right into it. We're gonna kick it off with our continuing series review of the Nightmare on Elm Street series. And tonight we start with Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors. This is directed by Chuck Russell, screenplay by Wes Craven, Frank Darabont, and Chuck Russell and Bruce Wagner. I think interesting thing to note there is, one, Wes Craven coming back to it, and Frank Darabont, who I think did a lot of work on this. He went to go do all the, some of the really good Stephen King adaptations.
He's done some good shit.
So I think this might have been his start. This came out February 27th of 1987. So they actually spent like a year or so actually making this one. Budget of $5 million, which notably is like double the budget of the two previous films. Did a box office of $44.8 million, which I think is a high point for the series so far. And basic premise here is like Nancy is back. We have a Heather Langenkamp. She's like the psychiatrist. And it's like a group of kids who are like kind of put into a psychiatric like facility / mental hospital where they are battling Freddy. That's the real surface level premise of this. And I think we're having fun now, Chris. I don't know about you. How about you?
This is a fun one.
It feels to me like this is the true sequel to A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, very much so. It's two is that weird outlier. Follow. It takes place in Nancy's house, but it's not really. It's a weird thing. It's a weird psychological film. This is a continuation of we got rid of Freddy. Oh, now he's come back. And the hero of the last one, Heather's come back as well. And she's been able to block him out or avoid him for the last however many years. I don't think they get into a, exactly how long, but she's a grad student of some sort. Like, she's not a doctor yet. They do make her call that out. It's years after the events, because she was in high school when the first one happened. She understands what's going on with them while everybody else around doesn't get it. And so there's this nice give and take between the adults and her as kind of the link between the kids and the adults.
It feels like, I just thought of this, but like, it feels like, we had that new Halloween that came out last year. It's like these legacy sequels that are just like, hey, we're throwing away all like the bad sequels and shit, and we're going like right back to be a sequel to the original. Except this is just doing that with only one sequel in between the two.
Yes.
It kind of like, that's kind of how I felt about it watching it. I'm like, this feels like the true successor. Go ahead.
It's interesting because evidently Craven had a falling out with New Line after the first one, and that's why 2 kind of is the way it is. He had nothing to do with 2. They brought him back kind of as like an olive branch. He was originally even supposed to direct this. That's how they got Heather Langenkamp on board. Turns out he ended up not directing it. And as you said, Chuck Russell and Frank Darabont kind of rewrote a lot of this script.
Yeah, I feel like Wes Craven had another fall. Yeah, like, I think one, Craven, I don't think Craven respects any of the sequels, maybe not even this one that he worked on. And I think him and Bob Shea did not get along. I just get the sense of that from watching Never Sleep Again and stuff. But anyways.
But this one feels like that, like what you were saying about Halloween. Like,
yeah.
like, this is it. We're bringing back the original people. We're kind of going back to that story. And it feels good.
Yeah. And it's like, it's, I think it still has a little bit of an edge. It's still a little scary. I don't think it's as like intense or dark feeling as the original, but like kind of feels true to the spirit of the original, but also going, how are we going to push this series forward? And how, like, it introduces like a bunch of new ideas that are interesting and also feel like they fit. Like, I think there's, like, really, really neat ideas in Part 3 where it's, like, one, it's all these kids who are, like, I think it's a high concept that is, it's a cool concept, like, where it's, like, we're gonna put all the kids inside of, like, in a hospital this time, and these are, like, kind of, like, quote-unquote damaged kids, but it's really just because they're like, you know, they're, you know, descendants of the people that killed Freddy.
Yes.
And they're just going through shit. And like, just kind of the idea, I don't know, I think there's like a couple new ideas in this. Like, one that each character kind of has their own like trait, which could be like a superpower or something in their dreams. Like, for instance, the one kid who was like the nerdy Dungeons and Dragons kid, like, he kind of like turns into like a wizard in his dreams.
Yep.
But also, like, on the flip side of that same coin is that like each kid has like a thing that Freddy is going to exploit because he knows their weakness. Like, so for instance, the one girl who she is a drug addict, and like the way her kill plays out, you know, with Freddy, like where it's like, I forgot what he says. He's got like the full, all his fingers are like, are hypodermic needles that are filled with drugs, and he's like, and you, it's such a gross effect. Like, you get to see her arm with like the holes sucking in them for the drugs or whatever. Like, I think those are two like really, I don't know, like cool, or I guess that's kind of like one really cool concept in it. And I do think like this is where they start to get really creative with the dreams and just going crazy with shit. And like cool effects somehow on a $5 million budget. Like,
yeah, there's some really cool effects. Like, there's a like this Freddy snake type thing, just like flat out is like eating one of the kids at one point. It's fucking awesome.
Like, the very early on, and it's like, I remember when I was a kid, when I was in the video store, like going to rent this, like if you turned around the box, that was one of the pictures on the back, was like the snake head Freddy, like swallowing the girl. And I remember just being like absolutely fascinated and horrified by that. Like, and like, I just like couldn't wait to see this because of that thing. And I think that is like one of the cooler, I mean, I think there's like a lot of cool shit in this, like a lot of, especially, you know, all the dream stuff, but I think that's like one of the cooler big effects in it. And I think like that alone would be well over $5 million now, like the entire budget of this movie. I don't get how they did this, because this is still a relatively cheap film, even at the time, I think. $5 million? Like, it doesn't feel like a big budget. I mean, by today's standards, it's micro-budget.
Right, but it looks good. Like, it looks and feels solid. Like, the effects look good.
Yeah.
Some of them. Like, there's a couple here. Like, I don't know. There's a couple instances where they use CG, and I don't think that stuff is great. Like, there's a CGI skeleton towards the end of it that just looks ridiculous.
Is it CGI or is it like,
I don't know. It might be like some more sort of stop motion thing.
Yeah,
it looks awful. Like,
I thought it was like some like Jason and the Argonauts fucking stop motion bullshit. But like, look, dude, I just got done watching The Terminator tonight, and that has the same shit near the end of it, where it's like anytime they show a full shot of the robot chasing Sarah Connor, like it looks totally fake.
Right.
But, and that was a big budget, like a bigger budget movie than this, I would assume.
Yeah, I would
think. I think so. Like, that's like one of those things where it's like, it's looks aged and dated now, but like, I do remember that part where the skeleton comes to life near the end of this, like they're like trying to bury his bones. And I remember, like, that was, like, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, my God, like, that's Freddy's bones, like, a skeleton fighting. Like, I was, like, super into that.
And I think, you know, as you said, like, conceptually, the premise here is really good. Like, it's, you know, we keep strong, it with kids. Yeah, yeah, it's a strong premise, and I like the idea of Nancy coming back as like that grad student, but she's studying dreams. So there's like, there's an expertise to her now. She took her trauma and like made it something that she could empower herself with. And then she's like transferring that to these kids. And you know, saying, hey, like, you can control your dreams. And it mostly works. I do think that, like, you know, they get to this idea that they're the Dream Warriors and they're stronger together.
I dig it.
I do, but like they're terrible at like waging war on Freddy, because like
they just get wasted.
Like, very quickly. Yeah. He's very quickly able to separate them, and you know, you mentioned the you know, the punk girl kind of with the hypodermic needles, like, she gets separated, and the wizard kid gets separated, and like they very quickly kind of like separate everybody out from it, so that, you know, their power of being stronger together doesn't really work.
Yeah, that's like another, like, kind of what you were touching on was like a thing I think is another cool, like, high concept thing here is like the idea of like these shared lucid dreams, where one, they could all be in the same dream together, and two is like, if you could recognize you were in a dream, you could control that. And I remember, I hate to keep going back to this, but like, this is the shit we grew up on. Like, when I was like a kid, like, that idea, like, and like, I wanted, like, it inspired me to be like, okay, next time you're dreaming, like, you're gonna try to recognize the fact that you're in a dream. And I actually did have a lucid dream once, after I saw this movie, where it's like, I realized I was in a dream and I jumped off a building, like I jumped off like a skyscraper. And when I hit the ground, I like bounced off the ground and I started flying like Superman. I was like, I mean, I don't think that's happened too many times since, but there, I don't know. I guess I'll ask you, have you ever had a time like where you're in a dream and you notice that you're in the dream and try to start controlling it or doing like something magical because of that?
I'm sure I have. Like, I don't necessarily remember anything.
You don't have like a specific memory of it, yeah.
But I'm sure that, yeah, this is probably the cause of that. Like,
I know for me, it was 100%. I used to go to sleep, like, you know, just talking about it now is bringing this back to me. Like, after I saw the movie, I used to like try, like, you know, and of course, once you're in a dream, like, you don't remember that, but it clicked and it worked one time. There's been many times since where I think, like, I realize I'm in a dream, but that's usually just causes me to wake up. That's like when I'm just like, oh, something's off here. And then, or right. I usually, like, it reaches some sort of climax where you're scared or something and you wake up. All right. But yeah, to get away from like our own psychology here, I do think that like this has a lot of fun kills too. And that's something I think we're going to get into part four too. Like, we'll save that conversation for a minute from now, but I mean, welcome to primetime, bitch.
Yeah, see, like, I love that kill, but like, yeah, watching it now, like, I don't know. Like, I know it's such an iconic line. It just feels weird. Like, it's like, I don't know. I didn't love it as much this time around. Like, I remember still, like, seeing it as a kid. It's like, yeah, fucking day. Like, look, he's like, he's getting back at him. And it's weird. Cause like, there's this, you shouldn't be cheering for Freddy, but you want to see him, like, you want to see what he does next. And the only way to do that is by him killing people. So, but I don't know. Like, I felt the welcome to primetime, bitch, which is not was not a scripted line. Like, that was something that Robert Englund just kind of threw out there. And I know it's like this iconic line now. It just didn't work for me this time around, but whatever. Like, that scene does, like, with him just like taking her head and slamming the television.
Another one that sticks out to me, like, has always stuck out to me since I was a kid, is the, I think it's the first kid he kills him, where he's like, He makes him into like a marionette. Yeah. And he makes, like, you see Freddy's head like hovering over the building. It's like this weird, insane angle shot. Like some of the effects in that part too look like a little dated, but again, when I was a kid, like the thing about this, like about part three, is like it's imaginative, you know, it's like creative in what it's doing. What did you think about? They give Freddy more of a backstory here with this nun.
I hate it. Like,
really?
I think it's terrible. Like, and maybe it's just because of like how they go about doing it with like this weird, like his ghost mom hanging around. Like, that just seemed weird, like weird and goofy.
I would have had, like, they could have had the one scene where she explains it and shit, but like it didn't have to be. Yeah. Like
I didn't need to know, like, that she was like gang raped by 100 maniacs. Like,
I think that's interesting. Like, I think it's just like, it's fucking crazy.
But to me, I don't know. And we'll talk about this a little bit with Joker too, but like, this idea of trauma forcing you to become a villain of sorts. Like, so like his mom was raped and like left for dead. And like, so just because, like, you know, there's this, I guess, nature, like the genetically, he was inclined to be a crazy person because his mom was raped by 1,000 people. Hey, one, not how biology works. Like, 100 dudes don't rape a chick. And
all the different sperms.
Like, right. Like, they don't all become one. Like, one of those dudes is the dad. Like, just a little weird. Like, and I don't know, they focus a little bit too much on it with, like, I think a really boring character. I find the other doctor not engaging. Like, I would rather have been following around Heather.
Am I crazy in saying he looks like a young Bill Maher?
What was that?
The other doctor, he looks like a young Bill Maher to me.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. But just how I feel, I think I like the nun thing. Like, I think I like, like, as far as backstories go, and I hear you that, like, yeah, it doesn't make sense. Like, if you bust out your logic and you're like, yeah, just because, one, he's the son of whoever impregnated her, not all the other people there. And two, that doesn't determine anything. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah, the guy was a fucking rapist and a criminal or whatever, but like, that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean Freddy becomes Freddy because of that.
Right. It doesn't mean Freddy becomes like a child rapist or child killer or whatever.
It was a simpler time, Chris. It was 1987. 1987, and like, I think it was like a simple, easy concept to follow. Like, yeah, like he came from these fucking,
right. Like, well, I just added like a layer. Very much. And I'm sure, like, 15 years ago, even I was probably like, yeah, that's a cool idea. Like, genetically, he became crazy because like the crazy people forced it on him. But I don't know. It did not work for me as much this time around.
It's like, now that we're picking it apart, and like, I really sat and thought about it, I'm like, what you're saying is 100% right, but I just like that they were trying to add a little something more to it to like push the story forward, and it wasn't like Thorn level of like off base, like, you know what I'm saying, like the Thorn cult from Halloween. It wasn't like that
Michael cult bullshit.
Yeah, it wasn't like that far. Like, it felt sort of true to the series in a way. It added something, and it also like gave them a way to like kill Freddy, because I think this is like the only Nightmare on Elm Street that has like a satisfying like idea for how you would actually kill him. You know what I mean? Like,
it makes sense.
All the others are like this weird dream bullshit where it's just like mind over matter, and your will and your lack of fear of him, like, that will kill him. It's like, that's okay, but this is like, no, you have to find his bones, and you have to bury his bones, like, give him a proper burial, and blah, 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 blah.
Right, the reason that he's doing this has always been because your parents, you know, like, you know, they killed him, but then he wasn't respected. He was left. So his spirit has been left to inflict on your dreams. And the only way to do it is to give him the proper burial that he should have had. And maybe that means going to a church and stealing some holy water and a cross.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. There's a couple other things I wanted to say. Oh yeah. Just one other thing about the nun thing. Like, I was reading, I went back and read Ebert's review, which I think while we were preparing for this, like over a month ago. I think his review is negative about the film, but he ended on, you know, there's a part where they give this whole stupid backstory, and she explains that he's the bastard son of 100 maniacs, and then Ebert ended his review with, like, now that's a title for a movie. Like, that would have been so great if they did a Freddy movie that was just called Bastard Son of 100 Maniacs.
Yeah. So going to that, like, you know, how they killed him, well, how they, like, you know, effectively get rid of him in the real world here. What the fuck are the rules anymore in this world, though? Because, like, there's, like, as we said, there's, like, a you know, skeleton Freddy chasing after this dude, not in the dream world.
It just feels like it's, like, whatever they want it to be in that scene, that's the rules. Like, it changes within the films. Like, they're just, like, they can't decide on... Like, I just feel like when I was a kid, I had, like, the rules down in my head, and I guess I ignored all the flaws in the movie, because, like, the rules were he could kill you in your dreams, and that's about it. And you could pull him into the real world if you touched him. And
defeat him there, yeah.
And just, like, I think we expected it to, like, stick to that as we're going to rewatch these, and it kind of doesn't, like, it just kind of...
It's crazy.
It's just kind of whatever it wants to be. Like, it's just, like, and you'll see, when we get into part four, it just starts to become, like, let's have cool scenes, and it's not about a story, you know? I do think that this one does have, like, a decent story, though. Yeah. Another thing that starts in this one is, like, the souls of, like, the children he kills give him strength, and they're, like, in his chest.
It's so gross, but it's excellent. I love it.
It's so funny. The other day or something, I searched like on Twitter, like anytime I had mentioned Nightmare on Elm Street, and I found a We Hate Movies quote that I had posted about this, where they're like, this is like, you know, somewhere around like the late 80s, like part 3 or 4, like this thing starts to happen in the series where it's like, you're gonna be part of my nipples. It's kind of like what it's like, this gross, like, he opens up his shirt and it's just like all these, like, face fucking nipples all over his, like his whole, like, torso. It's disgusting, dude. And there's more disgusting shit in part 4, which we'll get to, like, we're gonna get to very shortly here. I guess, I don't know. We kind of went all over the place, so I want to make sure we hit everything that you wanted to talk about part 3.
That's, I mean, and this is something that I think I may make note of in another one, but, like, I wrote down here, the moms in this series are awful. Like, I wrote down for the fourth one, the parents in this series are the worst. Like, they are terrible people. Like,
so Kristen's mom, and we didn't really talk about this at all, but, like, Patricia Arquette plays Kristen, right?
Yes.
And her mom is just kind of, like, annoyed by her, right? Like, it just doesn't believe her. Is that kind of, like, what it is?
She doesn't believe her, and she's, like, self-absorbed, and, like, I'm going on a date. Can't be bothered with her, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, type thing, yeah. Yeah, the parents are, like, over-the-top, comically, like, evil in this. Kind of like the dad in Last Blood, where he's just like, fuck you, I left you because fuck off. We gotta go fuck your, like, that's how kind of bad they are. But, like,
every parent on Elm Street is that dude.
I think that, like, it plays into... Like, I think I dug that part a lot when I was a kid, because it's like, yeah, adults don't understand type thing, you know? But, the parents are just, like, awful in these movies. Like, especially when you're an adult watching it now, you're just like, I'm not even a parent, and I'm, like, appalled.
And it's like, so, like, the one like mildly good parent that the series has had was Nancy's dad, like in the first one. Like
he's like this really drunk that's burnt he's out. Terrible like, here. Yes,
he's given up on life and like he's now become like a security guard and
he wasn't even dad of the year in the first one either. It's like, but he's the closest thing to a normal quote unquote parent.
Yeah, like what you would think, like you know, if your kid was going through something psychological like this, you would think like, all right, well, it's probably not, you know, a dream killer, but no, did we lose you, Jeff?
No, I'm still here. I'm sorry.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, it's been yeah, it's just weird. Like, I don't know. The parents are god awful, and we'll talk about a little bit more about them with the fourth film. But
well,
they're atrocious.
Let's close out three then and get into four. So part three, Chris, I'm gonna give 4 stars. I think it's like at the very least for me, it's my favorite sequel of the series, and that holds up on this rewatch so far.
Yep, I agree. It's a 4 for me as well. Same thing. Like it was my favorite sequel coming in. I think it's really still a really strong, creative, fun film. Young Lawrence Fishburne too.
Yeah, very kind of briefly though, right? He's just like an orderly, like
he's an orderly. He's in a little bit though. Yeah. He has a little bit back and forth in a relationship with the kids. So interesting to see him. I was like, it looks like Lawrence Fishburne a little bit. Totally is.
It's so funny too. Like Patricia Arquette went on to become great actress. You know, I really loved what she did in Boyhood, and I had a crush on her when I was a kid in True Romance. But unfortunately, she would not come back for part 4.
Maybe a good call.
We'll see. Let's get into part 4, man.
Yeah.
Let me pull up my thing here. If my computer doesn't explode in the process of this, but let's just get the facts out here. This is directed by Rennie Harlan. Screenplay by Brian Helgeland, Ken Wheat, and Jim Wheat. Release date of August 19th, 1988. So this is the 80s, man. We're just fucking year after year. How? I mean, maybe not how it should be, but it just...
And this was quick. They started filming this in, like, February of 88.
Like,
super quick.
This one as well. Okay, so they do the same thing with part 5 as well. Anyways, budget of $13 million this time, so and I think I could kind of see that box office of $49.4 million. So this is now officially the best, or at least most successful in the series thus far. And the basic premise this time is, this is I think where it starts to fall apart, anyways. But the premise this time is it's like the kids who are still alive from. The Dream Warriors.
Yep.
They're back in high school. There's some other new friends, and Freddy comes back. And we'll get into that. Don't worry. We'll get into how Freddy comes back, because that's pretty good, too. But I think this is where this series starts to like fly by the seat of its pants a little bit.
Yeah, it starts making rules up. Like, well, not even rules. Just like, hey, this sounds like an idea. Throw it against the wall. Yeah. Oh, it sucked. Let's use it.
I think this is where it really felt like, and I think this is somewhat true of at least the next couple, where it's like, they kind of didn't even have a script. Like, it was just like, there was a script eventually. Like, we're shooting off pages here. But I think it was kind of rolling in as they're making, like, the movie. That's the impression I get anyways.
That's accurate. I feel that, like, when I was watching the special features. Yeah, so like my last note on here is they had pages of script, but nothing solid. A lot of the time we had no idea. Like, this is from the director himself, Rennie Harlan. A lot of times we had no idea what we were going to shoot.
And I like, he takes credit for, like, I think coming up with a lot of, like, ideas for, like, on his own, like cool kills he wanted to do and stuff that, like, he, like, I think a lot of it was dreams that Rennie Harlan had when he was a kid, which is like, honestly, if you gave me this series, I would try to do shit like that too, you know?
Sure.
I think that this one feels like the most fucking, like, this is the peak 80s Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, it's, we're into generic, like, if you want to watch a generic late 80s slasher film,
this is it.
This is it. And I think I know where you fall on this, but, like, I kind of fall into, like, direction of, I like it because of that. Like, there's something I like about this one. I think it's fun and so goofy and continues, like, the creative ideas with the dreams anyways, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead. Like,
I don't know. Like, I think there are... So, like, I don't really think that a lot of the kills early in this. One, there's not a lot of kills early in this. It takes like half the film before stuff really starts moving.
Well, yeah, there's like kind of like a. I think that's a little unfair. I think there's like a 15-minute intro to these kids again, and then like without really anything going on in terms of like Freddy or anything, and then it's like. Chris, you want to explain how Freddy comes back to life in this
one? Oh God, so. Yeah, after like 15 minutes of like intro and like playing around in the dream world where Kristen is all like, you know, oh God, like we got to make sure he's not coming back. Like, why would you think that? But anyway, then this dog who is, I'm trying to think of like the kid's name. He's like his powers, like he's super tough when he's in the dream world. But anyway, him and his dog are in this dream.
And, oh, Kincaid?
Yeah, Kincaid.
Yeah.
His dog gets all nasty with him and then pees fire and it opens up a portal to hell and then Freddy's reborn.
And as ridiculous as that is, like, I had a serious note about this because this gets into, like, our point about, like, what are the rules of the series? Like, what is going on here? Because they buried his bones in the real world. Now it's supposed to, like, that's what's supposed to kill him, right? But right. Their solution for bringing him back is that his bones are brought back in, like, a dream.
The dream world.
Yeah, and, right. Like, that doesn't, it doesn't, like, if you actually stop and think about it for just a fucking second, like, it's just, like, the series never decided, even in the original, in my opinion, like, I guess, like you said, it could all be considered all dreams, so then whatever, but, like, just, right. The series just never kind of falls onto, like, what are the fucking rules, man? It's just, like, look, man, Jason had some really lame, like, ways he came back, too, where it was, like, a psychic girl, like, brought him back in a lake, or, like, electricity or whatever. It was always like electricity with Jason.
But yeah, but at least
that's like that makes
kind
sense.
Of a Frankenstein,
like,
right?
Exactly. This doesn't like this is like a series that is like supposedly smarter than that. Like it's like at least the first one is this more classy thing with like ideas and shit. And if you really just stop and think about that, like it's just such like it bugged me a lot that not only is like the dog pissing on the ground dumb as shit, like it, no matter how you do that, like it's happening in the dream world, so it's like I don't know.
Yeah, that's kill that point. It's really, really stupid. But, and then Freddy's back, and then he like very quickly kills two of the three remaining cast from three, Kincaid and Timmy, Joey, I don't remember.
Joey, I think.
I don't know.
The like, waterbed.
That's a good kill. Like, that is
cool. Like, it's got ideas.
It's cool looking. Like, and I think that's my problem here, though, is like, they're over so quick. Like, I don't think they're super creative. Like, I thought the ones in three were way more creative.
I like these.
But here, they're just really quick. Like, I didn't find Freddy menacing.
He's full, I was going to say Joker mode.
But he, like, yeah, he's full on, like you know, snarky, snarky anti-hero.
He's
like,
a comedian.
Yeah. And then, like, all of them, though, like, all of the scenes, like, there's, like, this really cool, like, math scene, like, we're taking a math test, and, like, the words are, like, reforming on the page, and the girl is, like, asthma's kicking in, and there's this dojo scene later that's pretty cool. But they all feel like they should be part of something bigger to me. Like
the sequence should go longer, or, like...
Yeah, well, like in the first one, or even in the third one, like, they would be tiered. Like, you would start off with the dojo scene, but then Freddy would kind of, like, fuck with you.
It would continue to spill out somewhere else.
Yeah. And now it's just like, yeah, all right, we have this cool idea. We're going to do it. It's over. Like, it's like, well, fuck. Like,
I guess I would agree with that, but I don't know. Like, for instance, I think that, like, I forgot her name, but the girl who's, like, into working out and shit.
Debbie. She's like, that's Debbie. The best scene. I think that is the best scene in the film.
Yeah, it's, like, really some awesome effects and shit in it, too. It's, like, she's, like, lifting, she's, like, bench pressing, right?
Yep.
And he, like, pushes the waist down until her fucking, like, elbows snap. And, like,
so gross.
Her, like, skin starts to break off, basically. And, like, it's basically like The Fly, where it's, like, she's, like, emerging from fucking
she becomes a roach.
Yeah, and it is like Cronenberg's The Fly, where it's, like, she has her head stuck in some of the glue in the roach trap, and, like, it rips her whole fucking skin off.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden she emerges as the bug. And then you get a shot of him, like, holding the roach motel, and I forgot what he says, but he fucking smashes it on her. Like, I think that alone is a good one. Like one of the best in the series, I think.
Oh, it's fantastic. Wow. Like, super creative, and it's drawn out a little bit, like, because, like, the whole time, you know, while this is going on, and not Kristen, the other blonde, she's not blonde either, I don't think. Whoever the star of this one is, the Dream Master,
Alice,
the redhead. Yes, Alice.
You can tell I saw these a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah, Alice, she gets stuck in a time loop with her boyfriend, like, where they're just kind of looping back around as they're trying to save Debbie. And we keep cutting back to, like, Debbie in more and more dire danger. And, like, I don't know, I found that super engaging, where everything else was like, I just wish there was more, like, just a little bit more.
I mean, I could see what you're saying. And also, like, just thinking about this movie, when I think about it visually, it kind of looks like a TV movie or something in a way. Like,
very much, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they had more money for this, and you could tell, like, they spent it on, like, these creative, like, kills and shit. But yeah, like, there's just that 80s sheen to it, where it just looks like shit, kind of. But I do think, like, Renny Harlin kind of, like, got to have fun with this. I mean, like, even going back to, like, that beginning where he's, like, brought back, like, in the junkyard or whatever. Like, it zooms out, and there's, like, this cool visual of, like, a whole planet that's a junkyard, and in the center of it is Kincaid screaming, like, no!
Yeah, I mean, he definitely seemed to be having fun with the material.
Like, was it Joey and the fucking waterbed? Like, the one note, and this is, like, the only thing I posted about this movie on Twitter at all the whole time I was watching it, was, like, I feel like there should have been some follow-up on that kill, because he gets found inside of his waterbed. Yes, I'm like,
amazing.
Like, shouldn't the parents or the police or somebody, like, fucking somebody been like, how did this kid end up inside of his waterbed? Like,
it's not punctured. Like, it's not like it was leaking and he drowned. Yeah. Like he literally fell underneath and it sucked him in. Like, no, he's, like, literally under there. Like, totally no holes or anything.
It's a magic trick. He's inside the bag of his waterbed. Like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I just think and it's, you know, it kind of, like, sums up this movie in a way for me, where it's, like, crazy gags and effects and shit, but it's just kind of this stupid.
Yep. Very stupid. Very, very stupid.
Like, I'm just going through some of my notes now. Like, the scene where Sheila dies, she does die from that. Like, when she's in the classroom taking the math test.
Yep. She dies, like, basically an asthma attack.
Which, by the way, I really loved when he, like, he kind of, I think he goes and kisses her and sucks the life out of her. And it's like this cool practical effect of her turning into a zombie or whatever. Like,
yeah, like just her really skin good. Drying out.
Yeah. It looked really good. But what the hell was like that mechanical hand that comes out of her desk? Do you remember that thing? It was like this weird sci-fi looking thing. I'm like, what is that? What, like, is this supposed to be like some lab project that she worked on or something? Like, what the fuck am I looking
at? Yeah, like stuff is just like, hey, this looks cool. Let's do this. Like, but it doesn't make any sense, guys.
We have Robert Shea once again here as a teacher in the film. And I just, my note was, has a producer ever put himself in movies like Shea has? Like, I don't think that's like a thing that's like, the director does that a lot, but not the producer. Like, dude must have like a massive fucking ego. I guess a couple other notes. I took one note, said, dude falls asleep on the toilet. Why do kids fall asleep everywhere in this series? Like, they're always just passing out wherever the fuck. Just so you can have a dream and that, like, you know.
It's like, oh, what would be a great place for a dream sequence? How about a toilet? How about a public restroom? Like, no. Doesn't make any fucking sense.
I like the soundtrack to this one. That's another thing we didn't mention about the last one, the Dokken theme song.
Oh, yeah.
Dream Warrior. It's a fun song. And I think some of the songs here are good. Like, I like that the one where, like, the brother's, like, working out. It's like, I'll give you anything, anything, anything. He's, like, fucking punching the punching bag and shit. Like, I think they use that again somewhere in the film. I don't know. I kind of dig the 80s soundtrack to this one.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It definitely places it.
I would listen to that fucking, I don't know what the name of that song is, but I would fucking put that on my phone and listen to that shit. I think the one, like, movie theater scene is really cool when she's, like, sitting in the theater and there's a black and white film playing. Eerie. It's kind of like a meta thing where it's like you're sitting in the theater watching this. And I just think it looks cool, and it had like some good mood. But then, like, she basically like goes in a diner, and we have this gross another like thing with like the souls and the fucking pizza that she's eating.
The meatball pizza.
And he fucking like sticks his fucking knife into one of the heads and eats it. Disgusting. And it,
like, pops. Oh, yeah, it's like gross.
Dripping and shit. Oh god, dude. The ending, how do you think about how they killed him?
I think it's stupid. I think it's so dumb. Like,
I think I loved it as a kid, but I think it's kind of weak. When they start ripping him apart, I liked that. Like, where?
Well, yeah, like when he gets kind of like attached to it, right? With the souls fighting back,
like there's like arms coming out of him is like some, like, cool practical
it,
effects.
It is a cool looking scene. I just think, well, and I mean, like, I think everything pretty much in this film, you know, is pretty stupid. So it's like, I guess it works, but I don't know. I thought the whole like Alice fighting Freddy in the chapel, like, oh, now I'm gonna use my brother's kung fu skills, and I'm gonna fight you, and I'm gonna like, that's the big conceit here, right? Is that each of her friends dies, but Kristen has given her the ability to, suck in their dream powers.
Does she have like items and shit from them too? That they're
there's that weird thing that the asthma girl made. I'm not even sure what the fuck that was. She has like her brother's headband, and she has like little items from everybody. I found it a little weird that every time somebody died, she like would take their picture down off of her mirror and like put it away. Like, it's not normally how people react when people die. They don't like eliminate them from their life, but I guess if you suck in a part of their soul, like, whatever.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's so goofy. I don't know. I did not enjoy it though. So.
When I was a kid, I was really into the climax of this movie, where it's like, I just love the idea of like, oh, someone's figuring it out and they're fighting back, like after like he's killed all their friends. Like, I don't know. Like when I was a kid,
right.
Like, that whole like thing worked for me. And
this is kind of like this and three are probably the two that I saw the most as a kid, because they would they would play these on like regular TV, like heavily edited, but play them on like regular TV on like there was like a Sunday afternoon horror thing that I would watch, and they were always on, like 3, 4, and 5, always on. Like,
yeah,
I saw these a ton as a kid, and I remember really liking it. Like, I don't know, coming back to it now, like I didn't remember a whole lot of it. I kind of feel there's a reason for that. Like, I remember bits of it, like definitely the Roach Motel and like the cool iconic stuff out of it. But like a lot of the story stuff is so lame that it just doesn't work.
It's just, I don't think it's doing a lot. Like, I don't think the story does much here. It's just, you know, a kind of torch getting passed from Kristen to Alice, basically, you know?
Right.
And, but when I was a kid, this was easily the one I saw the most. I think I had this one on VHS. I was just kind of into it because it, like I think they call it the MTV fucking Nightmare on Elm Street, because it's like you don't need a high attention span to watch it. It's just like it's fast and it's goofy and it's just kind of a bunch of connected like crazy scenes or whatever. And I still like it. Like I get why someone wouldn't like it, and I get. You know, I get it, I guess. But, like, just for me, like, I think this is the last one that's really fun. Like, this, like I said, this is where it, like, starts to go off the rails, but I still think it's, like, a lot of fun, this one. I think, like, it's a case of, like, they drove home drunk in this one, and they got lucky, and then they drove home drunk in the next few, and they did not get as lucky. It's, I guess, how I would put it. So I enjoy it. I give this one 3 stars, and I will probably see it a dozen more times before I move on.
I'm going to give it a 2. I will probably see it again at some point, but I did not come out of this enjoying it the same way I did, you know, 1 and 3.
So next week we get to watch 5 and 6. Well, yeah. 5 is the Dream Child, right?
Yes.
And 6 is Freddy's Dead. And, you know, we'll get into it then, but, like, I remember these as being the worst for me. And I know you said you saw 5 a lot as kids. Like, these two I've not seen much at all, like, because I didn't like them as a kid even. So, I expect, like, I have very low expectations for next week. But I don't know. How did you like 5 as a kid?
I think I liked 5 as a kid. Like, same thing, though, like, where it was, like, it was one of those, you know, those Sunday afternoon horror films, like, that, you know, that along with, like, you know, Halloween, Friday the 13th, Part 1 and 2, like, stuff like that that was just, like, heavily edited for TV, but I'm, like, able to watch it, like, I think that was like kind of like what hooked me in. I don't remember seeing 6 a lot. And I remember the last time, you know, I watched it, I was like, this is god awful.
I've only seen 6 probably once or twice, but I did actually get to see 6 in the theater. That was one of my first horror movies in the theater. So I got to see it with the 3D glasses and all that. And I liked it. I liked it at the time. Like, I liked it when I saw it, but, like, you know, a couple weeks after I saw it, I remember just being like,
it's not as good.
Yeah. I mean, the series itself, like, it kind of got off the rails for a while at that point anyways.
Yeah.
But it was just, like, cool to get, like, what you think was the last one. But we'll get into those next week when we have, like, fresh rewatches of them.
Yes.
We do have, two more films this week, and they're both new, and I think like I want to go spoilerific, kind of like how we've done the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, where it's just like we'll just talk about whatever we want to talk about. Spoilers for Joker and In the Tall Grass coming from now. And yes. I'm assuming a lot of people that will listen to this have seen Joker or know a lot about it. And In the Tall Grass is on Netflix. So which one do you want to get into first, Chris?
Let's stick with the horror and we'll jump right in the Tall Grass.
Okay. So this was, based on a novella, I guess, by Joe Hill and his dad, Stephen King.
Yes.
Right. I forgot the director's name. It's like Nick something.
Vincenzo Natali.
Okay. I got it completely wrong, but, my computer's like exploding here. Otherwise I would pull it up. And he did, like, Cube, right? And he's done some other stuff.
Splice, and if you remember that one.
I liked that one quite a bit, dude. I did not like Cube, but I liked Splice.
Cube is, it's a weird film.
And this is, I think this is a weird movie. It's, like, weirder than I would have expected for, like, a Netflix-type thing.
Yeah.
Very simple premise, though, and, like, a great hook. And I think, for me, like, the premise of this film is so, like, it's so simple, but so strong that it carries the whole thing for me. And it's basically, like, this brother and sister, they're driving across country because I think they're taking her to, like, give away her, like, child that she's about to have. Like, she's pregnant, and she's just gonna, like, let some couple adopt it, right?
Yes, so Becky, I guess she's leaving, they're traveling to San Diego or something like that. It's a cross country. And she is going to give her baby up for adoption when she gets there.
And they like, she gets a little morning sickness. They pull to the side of the road, you know, and with her door still open, like they hear like a kid calling from like this tall grass, you know, like this field right next to them. They go looking to help the kid, and they get lost in the field, and, like, it's kind of the whole premise of this movie is, like, there's this magical field like that once you step into it.
Can't find your way out.
I love that premise. Like, I think the director does a good job of playing with it here. Like, the ideas in it. What about you, man? Like,
conceptually, it's great. Like, it's so simple. Like, the setting is, for a lot of this is very much the same. Like it's just high weeds. Like, but like it's also a terrifying thing to be lost in something like that, where it's like, the fuck do I get out? And I can hear you, but where are you? Like I can't pinpoint you, and I'm walking that way, but you're not there. Like, so it's a simplistic but very terrifyingly real thing.
Yeah, sorry, I got distracted there.
It's okay.
But, yeah, like, it's just, like, the idea, like, the way, like, I think they kind of, like, show it from overhead shots kind of a little bit, like, of, like, the grass, like, shifting around a little bit, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, it's alive.
And so, like, just the idea, it's like these, like, I pictured it as like these, like, they're like on tiles that just kind of shift around as they're in there. Like, I pictured it as like a, like, not just magic, but like it just was like a thing that it was doing. Like, it was literally like moving the ground around on them and shit. There's some, like, you know, later on in the film, they like start to reveal more shit. Like, there's like a part where like they show these people that have like grass faces or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was a cool visual, or it's just like the swirling void at the center of their face. I like the idea of like there's this like rock like at the center of the field, and I think like Patrick Wilson like explains at one point that like this is like the center of everything for whatever reason. Like, this rock represents the center of like creation or some shit. Who knows?
But, right. Well, I mean, they're, you know, he's maybe not the most reliable person to be listening to, because he's also a little off after he's touched it. But it's definitely this kind of monolith iconic thing that is there, and it's definitely controlling everything. And everybody else around can kind of realize that it's maybe not a good thing, but
so this movie got like mostly bad reviews. Like me and you are pretty high on it, but like I think it's like sitting around 40% or something on Rotten Tomatoes.
And yeah.
Why do you think that is? Like, I get it. I totally get why people don't like this movie, but like I just wanted to hear if like you have an idea. Like
I don't know. Cause like why? I mean, full disclosure, I read the novella like when it came out. I enjoyed it then. I understood kind of like the concepts that, you know, they were going to be playing with. They do change some things here and expand on things, obviously, to make like a 50-page novella into a 100-minute movie. But
so it's 50 pages. I would call that a short story, dude. It's like right on the verge, you know. Anyways.
Yeah, like it's borderline. Like it's not very long. It's so simplistic, but I'm not really sure. Like to me, like, I mean, I guess if you don't like the concept and if you know, there's time paradoxes and time loops and other things that are kind of subtly and not subtly put on display. So if like, if you don't hook onto that, I can definitely see where you wouldn't like it, but I don't know. I think the performances are strong. I think the story is simplistically horrifying, and I don't know where do you fall on?
I think that the movie like doesn't quite come together. Like I think it has a really really weak ending. On top of that, like the whole like they went back again. Like he gets the kid out of there.
Yes.
Like he touches the stone so he could get the path out, but because you touch the stone, you don't want to leave. So he like just brings the kid to the edge of it and lets the kid get out. But then the kid gets out and it's like back at the beginning of the movie when they first find the field, and he just like warns them and they get out of there. And I just think it's just like, one, we're already like super into sloppy like time nonsense in this, like really bad throughout the whole film, I think. Where it's like it has this part where like someone dies, but then like the movie rewinds and then like we're doing it again. Like I could see how someone watching that could be really annoyed by it. Like I almost was, but I found the movie so like trippy and weird that I loved it. You know what I mean? Like
I guess I could see that. Like, and as you said, if like if you don't latch on with the time kind of loop paradox shit going on.
I don't feel like they handle that part well.
I love the explanation that they give though, like because Patrick Wilson he blatantly calls it out. Like, but as he's chasing Becky's brother and murdering him, he kind of lays out the whole concept of everything that's been happening, is that each interaction in the tall grass is each new loop is a different choice that could have been made. And so like, you know, when he kills him, he's like, you know, you went that way. You were like, and each time I caught you and killed you. And then they show the different like skeletons, of his different choices. So, I don't know. I love that idea of like, it basically like it's like multiple choice until you can figure out the way to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah. I ended up digging all of it. I just could see why it's like a goofy kind of corny movie, but then also kind of cerebral at the same time. And it's like, I just feel like that's like this niche that's going to appeal to a couple people. I was surprised you liked it as much as I did. Like, I don't know. I totally get like people that came away going, this thing's garbage. Like I get it, but I really dug it. I didn't dig the ending. I thought the ending's weak. Like, could come up with something better, but I don't know. Just overall, I had a fun time. Like, the ride is fun enough, and I think like the initial concept is so strong that it was enough to carry me through the movie. Anyways, yeah. I'm gonna give it 3 stars, Chris.
I'm gonna go a little bit higher than you. I did a lot. I'm gonna go 4. It clicked with me. Like, I was engaged throughout the entire thing.
So it's on Netflix. I think like we're both recommending it, obviously. So
yeah,
you know, be warned that some people don't agree with us.
Evidently, a lot of people don't agree with us.
Yeah, yeah. As for Joker, like one of my most anticipated films of the year. I don't know. What did you think of Joker, Chris?
That's it.
There's a lot. We could probably do a whole like hour episode about it, honestly. But also, it's kind of.
We could. I don't know if it's worth that.
I think at the very least, it's a film that is worthy of some discussion, like a little bit. But I also think that its greatest shortcoming is that it kind of isn't. Could have been something more. That I guess I was hoping for something more because they had really great trailers. At least I thought.
Yeah, and I could see where you were excited for it. Like I never was, but
smart.
And more from like the other side of it. Like you were like, this is something interesting. I think you even said it. Like you're glad that it was doing well.
Yes.
It's like why did like a movie like this need to be tied to a comic book property for people to go see it?
Like, I mean, this thing's gonna make it's made a shitload of money, like a lot of money, and this subject matter is super dark and unpleasant. Like this is a ugly, kind of nasty. Well, not ugly. It's a good looking film, but like thematically, it's very like. It's like this nasty character study that would never make over like $10 million, let alone what it's going to make like $1 billion or some shit probably. Like,
but you like slap slap the Batman property on it and all of a sudden it becomes, and to me, like one of the biggest failings of the movie is its tie to that.
I'm one of the few people, I'm one of those weirdos that like that stuff.
You're talking about
like the Batman stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, I just think it's useless and pointless and like
everyone says that. Everyone says that, and I personally like that. I like kind of like both the big things in this. One is like that his mom like basically was mentally ill and well, we don't know. We don't know for sure, but like,
well, she definitely was mentally ill.
Yes, yes, but like, supposedly, she at least claims that Thomas Wayne is his dad. Like, she was fucking her boss when she worked at Wayne Industries or whatever the fuck. And like, but like Thomas Wayne, he confronts him at one point. He's like, "No, dude, she was fucking crazy. Like, no, I'm not your dad." I kind of dug all that, and I was actually worried for a while that they were going to make him Bruce Wayne's brother, and I was happy that that wasn't like the movie. I guess leaves it open enough. But I was happy.
I'm fine with it being ambiguous. I don't necessarily think that tying it to Bruce Wayne or to Batman or to Gotham City makes this any better of a movie. It could have been any rich dude.
Like, it could. I mean, there's a lot of things that could be changed to make this. But
yeah, so like, I don't know. It just felt like, oh, we need to tie it to Batman in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're gonna talk about Thomas Wayne. I don't know. I really didn't like for the 7 billionth time on screen seeing Batman's parents die. Like.
I didn't need to see it. Because that
happens again.
I didn't need to see it, but I liked the angle they went with. Like, they could have not, like, they could have even just suggested it and not shown it, like, and that would have been fine. But, like, I liked the idea that it was one of his supporters that did it. Like, I thought that was, and, like, I didn't see it coming. Like, I didn't. So when it happened, I was like, oh, that's, like, so for whatever reason, I enjoyed that because I was like, that's how they're tying that in. Like, I didn't expect them to throw it in this time. I really didn't. So I was, like, pleasantly surprised by that. But I don't know.
So outside of the Batman stuff, though, like, it's a weird film. Like, one, like, I think, like, as you said, like, you know, it's a beautiful looking film.
Yeah.
It has haunting, dark material. But
I was shocked by the kill. I was shocked by when they killed Robert De Niro.
It's a brutal scene. Like, and there's another brutal scene, maybe like, you know, 5-10 minutes before that, that is just like, what the fuck?
Very weird scene though. But like, you're talking about like in his apartment when his two coworkers, his old coworkers, yep, show up. I thought that scene was, but then it was like doing. They strangely like chose to do comedy, and I get trying to cut like a really like. Cutting the tension with like comedy or whatever, but like it was weird because it was like midget jokes in the middle of this like,
yeah,
really like, fucked up scene. I don't know.
You're too short to get out. Like
after what happened, like it just felt like it went off weird. Totally for a second,
right? But I don't know. There's a lot about the film that's like totally weird.
That's the thing. Is like there's a lot of things that you could talk about in the movie, but like. I think the main thing for me is that, like, this movie was very close to being a good movie. Like, I'm just going to say, like, right out, I'm going to give it 3 stars. And I think it's worth seeing, and I think it's, like, it's a real movie, unlike a Marvel movie. Like, I hate to say it like that, but, like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, this is like a movie. Like, it's just a movie with some comic book shit in it.
But it's not the roller coaster ride, and like and look, I enjoy most Marvel movies, but yes, this is a film,
yeah,
as opposed to like you know what the Marvel formula is. This is it's something different. It's not your typical formulaic Marvel film.
It is like, you know, yeah, it's like, it's R-rated, it's disturbing, it's dark, it's like very unpleasant to watch, and but also like beautifully shot. I think, you know, Joaquin Phoenix gives an incredible performance. Like, there's a lot to like really admire about it, but then like at its very core is like nothing. Like, it's not saying anything. Like, or the things that it's saying are very surface level, very like.
When it can't pick, it doesn't pick what it wants to say either.
It doesn't pick. Like, I think I would agree with it. I would agree with it. It doesn't pick, but it also was like, it felt like things I would write when I was like 13 years old, where I'm like, yeah, man, like society's so fucking horrible, man. That's why people just lose it, man. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, I want something more. And like, there's little things where they would have built it out more, could have been political statements. Like there's a part where it's like his like psychiatrist, like her office loses public funding. So like just shut down. He's kind of fucked. Right. And that could, like, it's meant to be a message about like how like the system fails him and all this shit. Right. But like, right. It doesn't do, they could have done more with that, with him trying to go to other places and they're like, sorry, you don't have insurance. And, you know, like really drive it that, like, message home a little bit more. Instead of just kind of, like, bounces around between, like, yeah, maybe the rich are bad, maybe the system is fucked, maybe this and this and that, but maybe basically it's all because you people aren't nice enough to the loners and the outcasts in our society. And it's like,
right,
I'm sorry if you have a rough life, but I don't sympathize with the fact that you feel you have to kill people. Like,
well, and
it's a rough life, dude. You know,
there's a way here where they can make it so that it's like, yeah, like, you know, the Joker is the result of society's ills.
But it should have been more like. There's a part near the end where Robert De Niro says, like, you're like a, he's like, all I'm hearing from you is a lot of self-pity. And when he said that, I was on Robert De Niro's side, dude. I was like,
because he's right. Yeah, dude.
Like, I'm sorry your life sucks, but that's no excuse for any of the shit you're like, I'm sorry. That's like the way I felt.
Right.
When I
was you don't,
I was
you
on De Niro's get... side. Like, you little punk, fuck you.
That's exactly it. And like, we don't want to give, I don't know. Know their fucking names anyway, but don't want to give them any more kind of a platform. But like that dude in California, was it last year or the year before, that like went and killed a bunch of people because you know, he couldn't get somebody to sleep with.
Oh yeah, I remember, like, what you're talking about. He like made a video in his car about it, right?
Right. And like that's kind of what I felt here, like with the way that the way Arthur is approaching this, it's like, well, if you were nicer to me, like, I wouldn't have done this. Like, if you didn't put me in this bad position, I wouldn't have done this. No, like, there's still, you still have to operate within society's rules. Like, you don't get to play outside of them. Now, if they wanted to, like, turn that around and make, like, hey, the fact that, you know, Thomas Wayne, who's kind of cast here as a Donald Trump figure,
it's like he created this guy. That would have been more like,
right.
Like, maybe it's the lines of my politics better, but it's just, I don't feel bad that your life sucks, dude. I know it sucks. Like, it sucks for everybody.
Right. Lots of people's lives suck. They don't go and kill people. Like they, you know, it's terrible, and it would be great if you could have gotten better help, but you don't get to go kill people because of
that. Yeah. And his little speech about how, like, you know, this is what happens when you take, like, mental uncaring society, or it's just like, dude, like, it really sounds like a 13-year-old, like, having a fucking little fit.
You know, yeah, he's having a fucking temper tantrum because he didn't get his way. And
the other, there's two other things I want to touch on, and I'll let you touch on whatever else you want. One is the subplot with his, like, love interest. I thought was really terrible writing until we find out that, like, she was like, there was no relationship with this girl.
Yeah, it's like,
there's no way I bought any of that. Like,
fully agree.
Like, he shows up at her house in like clown makeup after he kills people on a subway, and she like opens the door and he kisses her, and she's like, they start dating. I'm like, no, she would have like called the cops on your ass. Like, what the fuck? Like, did not buy that at all. So to find out that it was
fake. I like that twist. Like, yeah, that it was all in his head, and he was, you know, he was projecting this, that this was happening.
I didn't like them over explaining it though. Like, they could have just like had her go, "Oh, you're Arthur from down the hall, right?" They didn't have to like then show the flashbacks, like M. Night Shyamalan,
right?
Like, it was fucking the end of the Sixth Sense and shit.
Like, it was fucking Saw. Like, yeah, we gotta show like all the.
Like, I got it right away. Thanks for explaining it to me.
It's like, why is she tense? Like, she shouldn't be tense around him.
Yeah.
Like, and that's like right away. It's like, oh shit. But then like for like, I guess the extra dumb people in the audience, like, you have to tie in like, oh no, they might not understand. So here we're going to do the same scenes that you've already seen, but without her there.
The one other thing I want to touch on is the ending, like the very ending after he like shoots De Niro and he gets arrested and shit and all that. I think this movie had like a perfect ending, and then it goes on for 5 minutes after that. So for me, the perfect ending is he gets busted out by his supporters, and he's like on top of the cop car. He's like standing there with his arms outstretched with all the chaos going on around him. Cut to black. Like, to me, that's the ending. You realize, right. Oh, he set Gotham on fire. Instead, it like goes into him in the hospital, and there's like this dumbass scene with him being fucking interviewed by the fucking lady from Magnolia, like asking him shit, and then like it cuts against something else. I forgot what the fuck else. Like, I don't know. They keep cutting to something else, like Bruce Wayne or some bullshit while it's happening. And then it's just like him, like, I think he kills her or something, and then he gets out and he's like on the fucking hospital, like, hallway, and it says the end. I'm like,
he's just running back and forth. Yeah.
To me, like, the ending is this, like, I love a movie that ends, like, right in the middle of something, and, like, right as something's, like, going. And, like, that would have been the perfect part when, like, they bust him out. He's fucking, like, got all his followers now. Cut the black. Like, you fill in the blank. And instead, it's like this stupid ass. Like, I hated the ending of this. And I hated the little cursive fucking font. Like, the end that they put over it. Yeah. Like, I didn't like. I know I'm nitpicking now, but, like, again, this is a movie that I have, like, all sorts of issues with. But I thought, like, they had a really strong ending, like, from the Robert De Niro. Like, despite what he says at the interview with Robert De Niro, like, just, like, that whole part is really tense and scary. Well,
visually, it's an iconic, like, it's an iconic image, right? Like, him, like, yeah, kind of just yeah. dancing, and you stop That's it, and you like stay. Right there, you know? Yeah, but instead, like, you drag it on for another 5 minutes. And it doesn't add anything. Like, we already know that Arthur Fleck is fucking insane. Like, we already got that. We don't need him to say, oh, he hasn't stopped. Of course he hasn't stopped. He's fucking crazy. He's gonna kill whoever gets in his path. Like, I don't know.
Anything else you wanted to touch on Joker?
I think that there's like lots of like little threads, right, that just don't kind of get tied up. Like they have these, you know, these two detectives, and they just end up getting the shit beat out of them. But it's like, okay, are we going to go, like, you have that scene, but it's not saying anything, right? Like you could have expanded on that and talk about, you know, police brutality and something. Instead, he accidentally shoots somebody and the mob gets him. But we need to be able to get Arthur away from them. So this is how we're going to do it. But they don't really add anything throughout the rest of the film prior to that. They're just there. Like, oh, like, of course the cops are going to like look into, you know, clowns that are fucking like, hey, you got any weird clowns that work for you at the clown shop? Like, of course we're gonna look into that. Like,
you have a guy who has a mental condition where he can't stop laughing.
Right.
They even confront him on that too. Which I guess is a real thing. I guess it's a real like condition. I've never heard of that.
It's like, is this because it's like it just so angry. It's like, be nice to mental ill people. Like,
yeah, it's kind
of, is that a real thing or is it fake? Like, is it part of your clown thing? Like, man, like, come on.
I will give him, I do enjoy, one, I think Phoenix is great in it, but his laugh, oh god, it's good.
It's very good. Yeah. Like, it's unsettling. Like, yeah, it's super unsettling. I don't know, he is phenomenal in it.
I think it's a movie worth seeing. Like, I don't know if you could, that comes through in what we're saying here. Like, I think I have problems with it. I'm disappointed by the movie, but I also think it's like way more interesting than, like, I don't know, Endgame, Captain Marvel, any of that shit I've seen this year. And I'm that's not to say even that it's better. I just think it's more interesting. It like speaks to me more as just something like, even as a bad movie, than that. Like, it's not a safe, at least to me, I didn't think right. It was a very safe thing. It felt daring. It felt, even if you don't like it, if there's stuff to talk about why you don't like it, you know?
To me, it's fascinating that DC even allowed this to happen.
I know! Like, it's fucking insane, dude.
But, like, for
as much as... It's insane how much money it's gonna make.
Right. And for as much as I like think like it doesn't have, you know, it's wishy-washy on what it wants to say, and like ultimately it's main message of like, be nice to crazy people.
Yeah.
Be nice to the mentally ill is maybe a little like whatever, but it has more to say even with that minimal message than like any Marvel movie does. Like, Endgame doesn't. Endgame is just. It's look. I enjoy Endgame. I found it to be quite a fun movie. It's not
about anything.
It is. It is just pure entertainment.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, I don't have any coming out of Endgame. Like, there's no like, man. I wish that they were really trying to push the, you know, rich people are bad point of view, or like, hey, even the simplistic, like, be nice to mental ill people. Like, Endgame doesn't have anything like that. So, like, even though I think Endgame is the better movie, this is a more interesting movie.
I like, you know, I'll give Marvel this, like say, like Black Panther. I think Black Panther has ideas in it. Like, there's, you know, subtle political shit, but like, it's just
there's like 95% of their shit does.
Yeah, but even Black Panther, it's like it is like, I hate to say it, like Scorsese, like this theme park ride. You kind of know what it's going to do. And, like, you kind of know what Joker's going to do if you know, like, Scorsese shit and shit. But, like, that it just feels more like this adult thing that I could connect to in some way. As opposed to, like, these guys have this power and they're trying to save the universe because of this. Like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. This is more grounded in some sort of reality. You know, whether you like it or not, and whether you agree with what I have to say or not. And, like, you know, I think the politics in it are weak. Like, there's a part where he says, like, I don't have any politics. And I'm like, yeah, you just described the film, you know?
Yep, the entire film doesn't have politics. And,
like, it has politics, but, like, it doesn't. It doesn't want to land a punch.
That's what it is. Like, and the angering thing here is that Joker, as an actual character within the Batman universe, is just, he's anarchy, he's chaos.
Yeah. Which is a form of politics, like,
right? But yeah, like, I could see, like, how he wouldn't necessarily take a stand on anything, but that doesn't mean that the movie itself can't.
They do that better in The Dark Knight, where he's like, "You see this pile of money? I'm gonna fucking burn it because guess what? I don't give a shit about money, bitch!" Like that's like they did the Joker better in The Dark Knight. I'm sorry, it's still the best version of it. You know what I mean? Like. I didn't need this backstory, and I got excited because it looked cool. And there's things about it, like, I'll probably see this again, honestly. But didn't need to happen. It doesn't replace, like, I think the best version of Joker, which is, you don't know his story. He'll tell you a different story every time, and he'll burn a pile of money, and he'll kill you, like, shove a pencil in your eye, because he doesn't give a fuck. That's kind of like, I think, the cool version of the Joker. This is just kind of fucking... they tried.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm gonna 3 stars. After all that,
me too. Like, I don't think it's a, terrible film. I think it had the potential to be better. It just doesn't seize on that.
We'll be back next week with at least the next 2 Nightmare on Elm Street fiascos. So, coming back next time.
Movie dudes.
Do 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 do.